This podcast is produced by KPP Financial Steve Peasley, President, simplifying a complex money world with investment programs to match a range of investment goals and life situations. And now today's podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Invest Talk. This is our June 14th, 2017 edition of Invest Talk. And as always, we're here to help you become an above average investor. So what are the most important investing principles to keep in mind? Is it to buy safe stocks? How do you think long term? Or maybe some people need to think short term, depending on their goals and their needs. Or maybe it's something else entirely that you need to focus on, that you know, you got a couple of the key principles down, but you have more to learn, and that's most people. And don't expect to master it overnight or even just in a couple of years. This is an endeavor that takes a long time, and you have to be patient and diligent to go after the knowledge you need to be successful. Now, of course, there's no one rule that is the most important when you're trying to invest, but there are definitely a few that are very important to use in your own investment strategy. And which ones are more important probably depends on your risk tolerance, your needs, your goals, both short-term and long-term, and what type of investor you are. You know, there's a handful of rules are what we practice and preach here every day on Invest Talk, and they become part of the conversation as we move along from topic to topic. And through answering your questions and the discussion points, talking points that we talk about every single day on Invest Talk. And this is the more you listen to us, the more you'll get a sense of what those rules are. And there are many, and they weave in and out of all of the answers that we give each and every day on Invest Talk. Now, investing success will require an understanding of long-range plans and politics, currency, key trends, and also concerns as well, or risks. Now, particularly if you focus on China, we're going to talk today about navigating the investing complexities of China. That's one of our talking points for this hour. And you may have a question about international investing as a whole, but I think the China one will be a good preface to understand how you think about various countries and thinking about their investment potential, risk and rewards from a higher level. So I welcome your call with any money topics. We'll get to the phones in a moment or two, but as always, just give us a call, 888-99-SHART. We are live 4 to 5 Pacific time on Invest Talk each and every weekday. So if you are listening live, you can pick up the phone and ask that question or whatever's on your mind. Or you can, if you're listening after hours, you can call the same number, 888-99-CHART, and leave a message and we'll answer on the next show. Now, our goal, as always, is financial freedom. A lot of people talk about retirement, but retirement is really about financial freedom. Some people have to work longer than to age 65 because they don't have the financial freedom that they would like at 65. And that's becoming more and more prevalent because people tend to forget about it, forget about saving for retirement until they hit 50, right? And a lot of times that's, say, too late, but it becomes a real uphill battle, especially when you compare it to how much easier it is when you start early in your 20s and hopefully at the latest your 30s. Now, improving your financial freedom has more to do with personal habits than it does with income levels. A lot of people talk about, oh, I need to earn more, but typically it's about people that spend too much. That's usually what prevents people from reaching financial freedom. But the people who are diligent and focus on getting to that goal of financial freedom and make that a priority early on, they tend to get to retirement or financial freedom even before the age of 65. And when you go back to thinking about personal habits, how many times have you heard stories of lottery winners filing for bankruptcy? It's very often they do. So it's, and the reason isn't because they don't have a lot of money. They just won the lottery. They clearly have a lot of money, but they don't make smart financial decisions. And when that happens on a consistent basis, it will bring you to the road to ruin, or at least to the point where you aren't going to have financial freedom. So being disciplined and avoiding a couple of common mistakes will significantly improve your chances of a bright financial future and the path towards financial freedom. Now, one of the biggest financial blunders that many people make is they don't pay attention to their balances. Many times, individuals will have too many active accounts and will lose track of what they all are. And there's these mutual funds in this account. There's a couple stocks in that account. And there's money kind of all over the place, old 401ks. They might have a small Roth, and they have an old SEP IRA, and they might have a brokerage account here. And you know, it's confusing. And they don't really have a set plan. And that's kind of what Steve is actually doing today up in the Bay Area, meeting with our listeners and current clients, helping them get on the road or sustain their road to financial freedom. Now, the best way to fix the problem of having too many accounts is to consolidate them into hopefully as many identical types of accounts as possible and continue to check the balances and have a coherent strategy around all of it. In today's world, it becomes easier and easier, and we have technology for our clients that aggregates everything together, and they can see it in one place, and that is helpful, and that's probably what you need to do, whether it's using Mint or any of the other online platforms out there. Those are great tools to keep your eye on the prize. Now, a common habit that might take a toll on our savings over time is high frequent spending on small purchases. A lot of times it's not the big stuff, TVs, cars. It's the meals and entertainment, cup of coffee at Starbucks that may seem harmless, but when you consistently do that, it harms your financial well-being over time. And these relatively inexpensive expenses are done repeatedly each month. They add up, right? So the message is keep track of your discretionary spending, set a monthly budget, and monitor those activities and try to temper them if you're doing them too much. So it's about being proactive and taking charge of your money habits, and that will increase your odds of attaining financial freedom. Now, do you have any money questions on this hour? Maybe it's investing strategies that you want to discuss, particular stock or company or industry that you're looking at. Let's talk about it. We have about 45 minutes left in the show, but it will go by quickly. So we want to hear from you ASAP. Our listener line is open, 888-99-CHART. That's 888-992-4278. That's our anytime line. We are live 4 to 5 Pacific time, as always. But let's take this question in that came in between programs.
Hey, guys. This is Jeff from Columbus, Ohio, and I listen to your podcast every day. I've heard you say multiple times that you should buy an index fund like the S&P 500 because over time it will grow. What do you think about buying something like a 2x S&P 500 ETF and dollar cost average buying across several months or years? I get that the losses would be twice as much, but wouldn't twice the gains in the long term be worth it? I appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
Well, first off, I don't recommend everybody just buy an index fund and have it grow over time. I think most people are over-indexed and they have probably too much exposure to the index. And I actually think it's building a very unhealthy market structure right now that increases the risk of a big unwind. And I think that will happen over the next 3 to 5 years. It's just a matter of when. Now, what you're addressing are leverage ETFs. And you probably haven't been listening to the show for long, or at least you haven't heard us talk about these leverage ETFs very often. But there's something called tracking error. And leverage ETFs, every single leverage ETF, whether that's double leverage or triple leverage, or I think they're actually coming out with a 4x leverage ETF, every single one of those are trading vehicles only because of that tracking error. And I can get into the specifics, but over time, they do not track the overall performance of the index. Just the nature of how these things work because of the tracking error. Okay. So, for example, If the index is tracking consistently higher, they can do well over, you know, many months, and it might perform double what the S&P is doing. But over time, risk adjusted, when you go in the next recession, when it goes down and the indexes go down, they're going to go down double the amount, right? So if the S&P goes down 40%, these will go down 80%, probably more than that. And it won't make it up on the upside. And that has to do with tracking error. So the more volatility you have, the more tracking error there tends to be. And that's why they're not buy and hold long-term investments. They are simply trading vehicles that you don't want to hold for longer than a month or two. And that goes for long ETFs, short ETFs, anything that's leveraged, whether it's leveraged towards the S&P or the NASDAQ or the Russell 2000 or however, whatever index they're tracking, they are not buy and hold investments. Glad I could clarify that for you. I'm financial advisor Justin Klein. We're here to help you make the best possible decisions you can with your money. They say you can tell a lot about a person by watching what they spend their money on. When it comes to spending money, there should be a good reason for every dollar. Purpose. The same is true for the time that you spend. So budgeting both wisely for your money and your time is a secret to a more positive life and more productive life as well. So don't waste time. Thanks for budgeting some time with us. Hopefully it's productive for you. 888-99-CHART is how to get through with your question right now. About 40 minutes left in the show. Give us a call. We can answer your financial question. Now, navigating the investing complexities of China. That's one of our main talking points today. So we're going to get into some of the positives, mainly what about the high levels of debt, overcapacity of industrial production and infrastructure and housing, which they've been building rapidly over the past 15, 20 years or so, demographic challenges, and pollution as well. All of those face challenges, but also opportunity as well. So we're going to get into specifics and hopefully give you a better understanding of not only what's going on with China, but how to analyze a country overall and the pros and cons of their particular situation. Also, how much life insurance do you need? This is an important one, I think, because I see so many people who buy life insurance and they're young and they don't really need life insurance. They get talked into it. Then they also, if they do need life insurance, they spend too much by buying universal life policies and variable life policies, things like that, that are just not good investment vehicles. Or they just overcovers themselves. Sometimes they don't cover themselves enough for their family. So we're going to discuss that. Then oil dropped to a 7th month low. Why is that? And the whole oil situation and the the supply demand dynamics that are going on right now. And then finally, what remains of Trumponomics? And is it kind of over? And what does that mean for the economy going forward? 888-99-CHART is how you reach us. 888-992-4278. We have time for your call. We want to hear from you. But let's take a look at the market today. Today was Fed Day, clearly. And the Fed raised rates. They talked about reducing their balance sheet that they built up over the three QEs that they did, quantitative easing policies that they implemented over the past 7-8 years. And they want to reduce that balance sheet. And they talked a little bit about the potential for that going forward. They didn't announce they're going to do it, just that they have a framework for it, and they may do it relatively soon. There is a quarter point. The Dow is up 46, S&P down 2, NASDAQ down 25. So that continued weakness in NASDAQ and tech stocks continued, and I think we're very close to the next big downtrend in technology stocks. This is Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein. It's not about the individual stocks and bonds you own, but the mix. So let's talk about your portfolio, your opportunities, what you possibly could sell. 888-99-CHART. Let's go to Tom in San Jose. How you doing, Tom? You want to talk about Snapchat?
Yeah. Hi, Justin. How are you?
I'm doing well. What can I do for you?
Oh, okay. Yeah, I want to talk to you about Snapchat, SNAP.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm thinking of buying it. I don't know. Is that going to be the next Facebook or?
Well, is that your investment thesis?
I'm sorry?
Well, my question is, what's your investment thesis? Are you, do you think it's going to be the next Facebook?
No, I don't think so, because the users are not that high in volume like Facebook has.
Yep.
So, and only youngsters are the predominant users of the Snapchat. So it doesn't compare to Facebook in terms of what the business.
Yep.
But in terms of the stock growth, right now it's selling low. So I'm thinking it may double or triple in 2 year time horizon. So.
And based on what are you thinking? Because it's cheap valuation wise, or it's cash flow earnings. I mean, what are you basing that double on?
Yeah, I mean, I don't say double. I think there is a growth potential because I think it's doing good in the advertisement. Recently, McDonald's is using Snapchat to hire people, so. I think if they aggressively work on improving the advertisement business, that I think there will be a growth for that company. That's my perspective. So,
okay. Well, yeah. I vehemently disagree. I think I actually think this stock is going to go down dramatically. I think this is actually a great short candidate. I think it's a poster child of the tech bubble that we're, you know, I think near the end of. And you know, it's an $18 billion market cap, and it's just simply not producing positive cash flow, any types of earnings by any measure. It's growing its revenue base, that's true. So its growth rate on the revenue side is very strong, but that doesn't have all their cash flow from operations has only continued to get worse and worse and worse. So their cost to get that revenue increase has only increased, and there hasn't come down to an improvement in the bottom line. You know, usually as you grow, you have less losses, and eventually they'll get to profitability. So financially, I think it's a big mess, and it's extremely overvalued. I mean, you're talking about an $18 billion market cap. And even if you go by enterprise value, which is actually, enterprise value is $18 billion. Its market cap is $21 billion. It's trading at very, very lofty levels. Even if they get to profitability, you're trading at about 36 times revenue. That's very, very expensive. And there's potential for user loss to Instagram, which has all started Instagram Stories, which is very, very similar functionality. And they already have a built-in install base of users on that side. So I actually think this is a great short candidate. I would, it's probably one of the top five short candidates I see in the marketplace. It's one of the last companies I would ever buy long.
Oh, okay. That's interesting to know. Yeah, sure. I appreciate that.
Okay. So I understand the hype, but you know, if you understand the theme of, if you listen to us for any length of time, we don't buy hype, you know, and this is not, we don't buy hype for our clients. We don't suggest our listeners buy hype. We buy sound fundamental companies that have cash flows and earnings and modest amounts of debt or no debt, that have growth, may not be 500% growth, but at least they are profitable. And I see no sense that Snapchat is going to get to profitability in the near term. And I think there's a lot of risk for them to not only continue to lose money, which a lot of these tech companies do, but also to lose a lot of users to Instagram. And I don't think they're going away, but at a $18 billion enterprise value, it's very hard for me to swallow. And I think this will probably go down over 50% from here within the next 3 to 5 years.
Okay.
Yep. Thanks for the call, Tom. That was Snapchat, S-N-A-P. 888-99 chart, 888-992-4278. So you get through and ask your question on today's show. I love that question. Now, our main talking point today is about navigating the investing complexities of China. Now, after the most rapid industrial transformation in the history of the world, China is too big and important for investors to ignore. right? There's got to be some opportunities there. But the problem is they're kind of at a crossroad that has them presenting a lot of risks, but opportunities as well. So it's paramount for any investor who's trying to find good investments there to understand the favorable trends, that the companies that are going along with favorable trends, and avoid the ones that may get caught in the challenges that are presenting their economy over the long term. So I'm going to go into that after the break and hopefully give you some clarity on China. 8899 chart. Be sure to sign up for our InvestTalk Insider program. Insiders can access chart lessons, recorded webinars, special watch lists, and it's free. Just click on the InvestTalk tab on InvestTalk.com. Now you have our number, right? 8899 chart is the way to reach me right now on InvestTalk.
Our podcast continues. First, a couple of words for KPP Financial and their new Disciplined Equity Program. This is an addition to KPP's select investment programs, and it raises expectations. It targets focused growth for maximum returns. This strategy offers consistent exposure to the equity markets by focusing on only high-quality companies. And although the portfolio is concentrated, it limits exposure to any one sector of the market. Check it out if you're interested. Click on the Investments tab on InvestTalk.com or click on Contact Steve and he'll gladly fill you in about it. As with all of KPP's programs, a KPP Financial Principal is personally invested right alongside their clients. This is parallel investing and it's your assurance of optimum care and diligence. The new Disciplined Equity Program from KPP Financial. Now let's get back to the podcast. And now let's continue with InvestTalk for this Wednesday, June 14th. Financial advisor and licensed realtor Justin Klein welcomes your call right now on any money topic. Our direct line, 888-99-CHART.
888-992-4278. That's how you get through and ask your question. We have about 25 minutes left in the show, so get your call in soon. Now, before the break, I talked about China and how they're kind of at a crossroads. There's some opportunities, just like there are in every country, but there's also some significant risks as well. So let's go over them. What are the challenges that we're seeing? Well, first is high levels of debt, okay? Then overcapacity of industrial production, infrastructure, and housing. Demographics based on, because of the one-child policy that started 38 years ago. And pollution as well. So debt. Debt total in China has grown from 150% of GDP to 276% of GDP today. Now, it's important to understand that the problem with their debt is really centered around their state-owned enterprises. And this is where you get into the easy argument about government-run companies that tend and entities tend to run inefficiently and misallocate capital and create structures and infrastructure that are just not profitable or economically productive. Now, the government debt as a total is only 67% of GDP, which isn't that high. It's reasonable for a large economy like China. And household debt, because they save a lot, is about 45% of GDP. Still not very high. But corporate debt is very high, 164% of GDP, and 60% of that is attributed to state-owned enterprises, which represent about 100% of GDP. Now, some of these state-owned enterprises are profitable, and they're paying down their debt, but many others are very debt-laden, unprofitable, and they still employ a lot of people. And the government's primary goal to stay in power is to continue to employ people. So what are they doing? Well, they're supporting these state-owned enterprises, right? And they're doing that by forcing their four large banks, which are also state-owned enterprises, to support their unprofitable SEOs, state-owned enterprises, that aren't banks, right? So they're funneling money basically from the government into state-owned enterprises, which are funneling money into these other state-owned enterprises that are non-banks, that may be manufacturing companies or real estate companies, whatever they are, to sustain them, even though they're not profitable. They have a lot of bad loans. And that's kind of where the biggest risk lies. And the positive is that the government has foreign currency reserves of about 27% of those loans. So they could take that money, those foreign currency reserves, and throw that into these SOEs, state-owned enterprises, and sustain them for a longer period. And that's kind of what they've been doing. Now, they have to sell off assets, a lot of times dollar-denominated assets, treasuries to do this, and that's one of the reasons why the yuan has been weakening, etc. But overall, that's the biggest issue they have with debt. Then there's overcapacity. When they grew all their economy based on American consumerism, and then we hit the financial crisis, it was showing how over-leveraged they were to the American consumer. And they overbuilt housing, infrastructure, and a lot of factories. And so as the economy grows, they're going to try to absorb a lot of that overcapacity. But the problem with that is demographics. And this, I think, is the biggest challenge that China has, is that the one-child policy, while it had its purpose back in the day, it's created a situation of one productive child supporting two parents and four grandparents. And a lot of those older people are now hitting retirement, and they're going to need health care overall, right? And so you got to look at drug distributors, online travel agencies who, what do you do in retirement? You travel a lot. Right, so that's where the opportunity lies on the demographic side. But it's a demographic situation that could create an economy that is not very productive. Their efficiency and their productivity is likely going to slow, just like we have seen here as baby boomers retire. Right, so that's an issue as well. And then lastly, pollution is a big problem. Because of rapid industrialization, they're trying to clean up their air problem, which is probably one of the worst in the world. So there's certainly some investing potential for clean energy in China. And then e-commerce is another area where I think there's a lot of opportunity. Companies that benefit from networks effects and economies of scale of e-commerce, that's where you can find a lot of opportunity. So that's a quick rundown of China and their pros and their cons, and what potential opportunity you could see there in China if you're looking for opportunities in China. Let's get back to our 24-hour listener line and pick up another question. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number.
Hi, Steve. My name is Sanket, and I live in Princeton, New Jersey. I'm a big fan of your podcast. I learned all finance-related basics listening to your podcast, and listen to it every day. I just wanted to get your thoughts on inverse ETFs such as SH, SDS, SPXU. These are all inverse ETFs. They haven't done well, especially after November last year. My question is this a good time to buy any of these ETFs? I'm 31 years old, and I'm not averse to taking risks. I look forward to hearing your thoughts on your podcast. Thank you.
Well, basically, he's looking to profit from the next downturn in the market, which I think we're pretty close to, probably not a week away, but I think a couple months away at the I don't say the most, but it's about where I think you'll see the time where the market really starts a protracted pullback, and buying a short ETF is a good way to take advantage of that. Now, SH is single leverage, and I think the other two he talked about are leverage ETFs. So if you're looking to hold kind of a medium term, you want to use SH because it's not leveraged. You're not going to have those tracking errors. If you're only going to hold for a month or two for the next quick drop in the market, I would say SDS and SPXU are good vehicles, but you don't want to hold those for too long. So I think it is a good time. Could there be more upside in the market? Near term, sure, there might be a little bit more, but I think we're getting very close to the end of this run since November, like you talked about. 888-99 chart, 888-992-4278. Now it's time for Invest Talk 101. Now, as you approach retirement, you're looking for ways to generate income. I have a conversation today with a lady who's a retiree, and she's 73, going in our balanced income program, and it's going to be a great vehicle for her to get income. But of course, dividend paying stocks are one way, but dividend paying stocks returns differ. They fluctuate a lot, right? And there's some risk there. Now, typically companies that are paying a high yield are in more volatile sectors or have higher risk than those that pay a lower, more conservative dividend. Now, looking at different sectors, utilities are the most popular with investors going for dividend paying stocks. And it's probably one of the more popular dividend-paying sectors in the market right now. Now, real estate investment trusts, or REITs, can make sense too. Some pay higher dividends than utility companies, but they're taxed at your ordinary income tax rate. So they're great to be held within an IRA, a tax-deferred account. So understand that as well. Now, some of the sectors to consider are healthcare and real estate, obviously, but typically a higher dividend. They typically pay a higher dividend because the demand for healthcare as baby boomers age is pretty high. So when you're dividend shopping, understand the pros and the cons of the particular sectors. They all have their own intricacies and their own levels of risk, and diversify. Don't just stick with utilities or stick with REITs or stick with pharma companies or a particular type of REIT. You want to stay diversified. And that's how we do that in our balanced income program. In all of our programs, really, is we focus on not getting more than 15, 20% the most of any one sector. So be aware of that when you're searching for dividends, you're trying to create income. That is a rule of thumb that you really need to heed, because there are plenty of times, think of healthcare right now, it's kind of up in the air. The change a guard of out with Obamacare and in with whatever Trump care will eventually be at the end of this year or next year could change things. So there's always risks involved as well as interest rate risk. And utilities tend to have the most interest rate risk of all out of the various sectors, as well as REITs. So be aware of that and understand all the risk when you're getting into these dividend payers. That's Invest Talk 101. If you have a question on this topic or any money matters, it's time to check in now at 888-99-CHART. That's 888-992-4278. Or you can make it a personal note that would come directly to me. Just click on the Contact Justin button on investtalk.com.
Is the risk worth the reward? And how much risk can you live with? Important questions to find answers to. And you can do that in a matter of minutes with our free risk analysis tool on investtalk.com. Check it out. It's on investtalk.com. Just click on the Invest Talk tab and then free risk analysis.
Hi, this is Miguel from Utah. New to the show. Love it. Thank you. Please convince me to sell my Tesla stock. I know you guys are not too huge of a fan of them. They've grown so much lately, but I really know I need to sell them. Also, Weight Watchers, I bought them right before Oprah Winfrey started with them, so they've grown quite a bit since then. Wanted to see what is your opinion on that stock, Weight Watchers. Thank you.
Sell your Tesla. Tesla is the most overhyped nonsense company I think I've ever seen in my career. They don't make money. They burn cash. It's all over-promising, and they always under-deliver. Talking about the Model 3, there's no way they are going to get profitability on that anytime soon, and they're going to continue to burn investor cash, raise money using convertible bonds, and Elon knows that the equity markets overhype companies very easily. People buy into the story of Tesla, but it is not a sustainable business. It's just, if you look at the numbers, you understand the economics of it. they may do something else besides build cars that may get them the profitability, but it's not building cars. I'll tell you that much. The Model 3 is certainly not going to be a profitable endeavor, but as long as investors keep buying the sales hype of Tesla and liquidity is strong in the markets, could they continue to go up? I think so, but I think we're very close to the end of that. And you know, we actually recently shorted Tesla it was on Friday. So I would absolutely sell Tesla ASAP. Now on Weight Watchers, if you look at let's look at the numbers on that. You've done well because of Oprah. Oprah came out, when was this? Sometime last year, I want to say, and endorsed Weight Watchers. I think it was actually, was it February this year? It had a big jump. I'm trying to get a sense of when that was. Actually, I think it was 2015 is when there's a big jump. Came all the way back, rallied again. Let me look at their figures. They're are they overvalued, undervalued? Not great. 12% operating earnings yield. That's pretty good. My aunt actually works for them in New York. She's a Weight Watchers coach. So I can't really say anything about Weight Watchers. It helped her lose a lot of weight. I'll say that. Their business isn't doing so hot because everyone's now into Fitbit and using apps. And, you know, the tools for Weight Watcher aren't as, I think, attractive as they used to be. It's not cheap. You're trading at a 20 PE, which isn't, you know, crazy high for this market. You know, the market's trading at about a 20 PE ratio. Enterprise value to EBITDA is about 13.5. Not super cheap either. In fact, it's one of the most expensive levels it's been in its history. So I would say sell it. You have a big gain. You at least take most of your money off the table and redeploy that somewhere else, because this is also a name that's very valued. Not quite as overvalued as Tesla, but then again, what is? But Weight Watchers is certainly a name that I would trim at these levels. 8899 chart, 8899-24278. That's how you get through and ask your question. We have 10 minutes left, so if you're going to call, do it as soon as possible. Now, oil dropped to a seven-month low today because of an inventory report that was not so great. Crude inventories rose 2.8 million barrels last week, and most analysts were expecting 2 to 3 million barrels, so it was the high end of that range. And there was a smaller than expected decline in domestic supplies, so and an increase in gasoline stockpiles and crude production. So production's up, gasoline stockpiles are up, and you saw West Texas Intermediate crude fall to $44.74 a barrel. That's the lowest since November 14th of last year, and I think we're headed much lower. I just don't see with a hawkish Fed, which is kind of deflationary, with the oversupply, an increase in supply from fracking, and increased stockpiles. I only see this problem getting worse. So it's one of the reasons I don't think we have any exposure to any oil equity. I think we have some bonds related to the oil market, but I don't think we have any equities related to oil. So I would stay away from the sector overall and bond. And I think prices are going lower. If you're listening to Invest Talk, we'd love to hear from you before this hour is up at 888-99-CHART.
I have three questions about the terms. What is the term aftermarket? Does that relate to our stocks being sold overseas? And the second term is intermarket. And the third term is basis points. What do basis points mean? I love your show. Thanks again. Goodbye.
I didn't hear the first question, but intermarket means intraday. Oh, aftermarket was the first term. Aftermarket is just whatever happens after the market closes. The market's open from 6:30 to 1 p.m. Pacific time, or 9:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. Eastern time. And intramarket is between those times. And aftermarket is when things trade beyond those time frames, and there are aftermarket exchanges, things like that. And so that's that means. And basis point is referring to rates, interest rates. And 100 basis points is 1%. Okay, so 100 basis points is 1%. So if the 10-year moves 100 basis points from moves from 2% to 3%, that's 100 basis points. If it moves from 2% to 2.5%, that's 50 basis points. If it moves from 2% to 2.01%, that's 1 basis point. So I hope that clarifies what a basis point is. 8899 chart, 8899-2-4278. We have 3 minutes, 4 minutes, so you better call in ASAP. Now, how much life insurance do you need? And the first question you have to ask yourself is there anyone that is financially dependent on you? Anyone financially dependent on your income? And if the answer is no, you probably don't need life insurance. But for a lot of you, there is likely somebody that is financially dependent on you, whether that's a spouse or children. And so if you're young and you don't have anybody financially dependent on you, well, then you should probably use that money to save, to pay down any debts. Don't waste it on life insurance because it's pointless. You might get talked into it. You're going to probably in your lifetime come across a friend or somebody you know who is a life insurance agent, and they're going to tell you you need life insurance. Well, unless you have somebody that's financially dependent on you, you don't need it, okay? Now, how much do you need, though, if you do have somebody who is dependent on you or multiple people that are dependent on you as an income source? Now, one guideline of how much life insurance you need is to calculate 10 times your yearly income. But a lot of it depends on various factors. It's a rule of thumb, but there's a lot of variables that go into figuring that out. Exactly. Such as your current income, a lot of debt you have, any businesses that you own, the number of children you have, if you have a spouse or not, is there credit card debts or mortgages to pay off, etc. Now, a good formula is to take your family debt obligations left behind and cash needs going forward and then subtract out the assets that you have. And then add in any, understand any education costs for your children, etc. that might be needed. So here's a good rough example. Say you earn $50,000 a year, you're married, and you have two kids, young kids. So you and your spouse owe $100,000 on your mortgage, carry $15,000 of debt on your car, credit cards, etc. And you're looking at a 15-year policy to get your young kids through high school. Now, you'll take those obligations together, which is about $750,000 in income replacement. So $50,000 times 15 years. I'm using 15 years instead of 10. 15 years because that's what you're going to need to get through college, right, for your kids. $200,000 for anticipated costs for college and $9,000 for a funeral. So total, that's a grand total of a little over, it's called $1.1 million. Now maybe you have $15,000 in college savings, $30,000 in cash savings, and a $100,000 group life insurance policy through your job, right? So something that you already have paid for. But it's probably not enough. So you subtract those out from the 1.1 million, you get roughly around 900,000, and that's what you'll need in term life insurance. Not variable, not universal, term life insurance. And Steve will tell you the same thing because he was in the industry. Term life insurance is the only insurance, life insurance you should ever buy. Time's up for the hour. Before we go, reminder, if you missed getting on Steve's schedule in San Jose today, he'll be back up there in July 18th. To reserve your hours, go to investtalk.com. Click on the Invest Talk tab. That's for July 18th in San Jose. I'm financial advisor Justin Klein, Chief Executive Officer of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. And for Steve Peasley and everyone at KPP, thank you for being with us. Let's meet up again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.